Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 121 for Friday, November 12, 2010. This is the third of three episodes that I prepared and preloaded in Cambridge, Massachusetts before leaving on a trip to South Africa and Botswana with my wife Darlene and her sister. These preloaded episodes do not contain news or comments, which will resume with TKC 122 on Friday, November 19th after we return. For this show, you are going to hear the conclusion of the presentation which I gave at PodCamp Boston 5 on September 25th. It was titled Paging Ahead, Tips and Tools for Ebook Mastery. Before we get to the presentation, I want to pass along a tech tip which I received from loyal listener Jim Jones in Omaha, who emailed the following. I don't know if this is already a widely known fact, but I discovered today that text-to-speech on the Kindle 2 can be turned off by clicking the back button. This is helpful to me when walking on the treadmill, Jim wrote, as there are times when I'll want to go back in the book a page or two, but it's a little cumbersome to work the shift sim sequence, or even more so to use the font key path while walking at a brisk clip. Of course, you have to use the normal process to start the TTS again, but at least this reduces the number of clicks by half. Clicking the home key accomplishes the same thing, but that takes you out of the book, so it's not as useful. Not the most earth-shattering tip ever recorded, I'm sure, but at the end of a rough week, even small victories feel nice. After receiving this email from Jim, I tried out his tip on my Kindle 3, and it works just the same way as he described on his Kindle 2. With text-to-speech on, you can simply press the space key to pause the speech, but if you do that, you won't be able to use the next or previous page buttons to go ahead or to previous pages in your book. The pausing of text-to-speech using the spacebar keeps you on that page. If you press the spacebar again, it simply resumes the sound of the robotic reader where you left off. But if you use Jim's technique and you're reading along and the reader is reading to you, you press the back button, the text-to-speech is simply turned off. And at that point, you're free to page ahead or page back in the book with the buttons on the side of the Kindle. To resume text-to-speech, you do have to go back to the font button and move the cursor down to turn on. This is a pretty handy tip that I didn't know about, so I want to thank Jim Jones for passing it along. If you have discovered a handy tech tip, something that helps you use your Kindle more effectively, I hope you'll consider sharing it with us. You can email your tech tip to me at podchronicles@gmail.com, or you can leave it as a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. Now we will return to the wonderfully named Microsoft Nerd Center. That stands for the New England Research and Development Center, located at 1 Memorial Drive in Cambridge, Mass. That's where this year's PodCamp Boston, the fifth iteration of the original PodCamp, took place on September 25th and 26th. My presentation was in the morning of September 25th, and you'll find the first part of my talk in TKC 120, which also included my interview with Ryan Block about 3 days earlier. In this concluding portion, you are going to hear an author recently published by a traditional publisher push back a bit from my criticism of those publishers based on his own experience with his own book. The speaker, this is a little more than halfway through what you're going to hear now, that speaker is Steve Robbins, and his book, which I'm enjoying on my Kindle, is titled Get It Done, Guys, 9 Steps to Work Less and Do More, available for $9.99 in Kindle edition from Macmillan. Following up Stever's comments, you will hear Matthew Ebel, a leading songwriter and troubadour of the internet, chime in with his own observations of how the world of music distribution has changed over the past decades on a path that looks like books are now starting to travel. If Google Editions finally is launched while I'm in Africa, I will be eager to explore it and update what I had to say about it at the start of this concluding portion of Paging Ahead, Tips and Tools for Ebook Mastery.
Now, the big new source of ebooks that's looming is Google Editions. And that is going to be an ebook store that Google is creating. And they've been talking to publishers, they've been talking to people who have books that are in the the Google Books system at this point. I know how this is real because my mother has a book that I loaded Google scanned for free. It's available in Google Books. You can go in and search it online. You can copy little pieces of it. And they sent us an email saying, your book will be able to be listed in Google Editions for people to purchase it. And so we had to, you know, fill out some stuff and have that happen. So that's pretty exciting for, you know, her and for other authors. What's weird is Google announced this in January, said that it would be here by the summer. Summer has come and gone. And it just never has shown up. So, but it could show up any day. And when it does, the pricing will probably be higher, I think, because they're not going to be pushing on the publishers as hard as Amazon has. They've had some real confrontations with publishers over pricing. And but, you know, Google is Google. So if they get into the e-book store business, it's certainly going to be of interest to all of us who are active in this space.
I'm going to talk just in passing. Yesterday was a big day in the world of the Kindle because it was the first third-party app that showed up in the Kindle store. It's appropriately Scrabble, we're talking words, $4.99. You can buy it here just the way you buy a book. It shows up on your Kindle, and you can play Scrabble. Apparently with other people, I didn't do that last night. I was just playing with a robot. Robot was beating me, but this is likely to be continuing new kind of content that's available, and it's also, I think it's going to be open to developers the way the Apple Store is. I know a guy, a friend of mine in Seattle, is working on an app. This is going to be potentially a pretty powerful new capability of Kindle because you're going to have all these developers doing things that will make sense and help be a better device. So that's something just to keep an eye on. Now, I want to talk about these tools that I mentioned. Calibre is a free tool, and it manages your ebooks. So if you have some of these format issues, you've got an EPUB book that's not copy protected, you can use Calibre to bring it into your Calibre list of library items, and then it will automatically move it to the Kindle. You plug your Kindle in, Calibre sees it's the Kindle, and you go through some setup, and within seconds, you've got a book that was an EPUB format that you can read on the Kindle.
Will it work for PDFs?
Yep, PDFs, yep. It'll take a PDF, and it'll turn a PDF into a MOBI format. And, you know, PDFs, there's all different kinds of PDFs, and depending on how they were entered in the OCR software, some will survive this process better than others. But Calibre's a way to do that. Yeah. The question is, how robust are these to the elements? And I think there's a certain amount of sensitivity to them. I've had a couple of Kindles kind of crash, and Amazon replaces them. One thing that's harmful is if you put any kind of pressure on the e-ink screen, you can kind of A lot of things are possible because of the fluidity of these formats. The only thing that's going to get in the way of being able to read a book one place or the other is the digital rights management. Somebody putting something on here to protect their intellectual property rights. And barring that, none of these things, all of these things will work everywhere else, sometimes with a little more tweaking than not. But the Calibre is a great program. It's a guy who keeps updating it, so it's the interface is it's pretty nice. In other words, if I open, you download it to your computer, and so you've got the program on your computer, and it gives you a list of all your books and then all these options that you can move them to the Kindle and convert things. You can sometimes the metadata is kind of screwy on ebooks, so you can go in and play with that if you want to give it a different title than the one that goes. So this is what Calibre looks like, and I don't happen to have any books in there, but you've got book conversions here, and all of your books, if you're using it, will show up in this middle screen, and you can essentially do stuff to them. Yeah.
I think the best feature of Calibre, I have a Nook, and Calibre a lot. The best feature of Calibre is being able to create your own RSS feeds.
Right. Yeah.
So I put there the RSS feeds I typically read.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as I plug my Nuke, it will download, convert to the PDF format with a table of contents and everything, and I'm reading the Nuke.
That's beautiful.
So that's, I think, more than just the managing.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Because and what he does, too, is he's gone out all over the world and found periodicals, newspapers, and all different languages. So you can go through and say, I like this, 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 and this. I think a lot of times, just like the RSS feeds for a lot of publications, they're not getting into the full content because they want to sort of sample it. I downloaded the New York Review of Books using Calibre, just as you say. A lot of great articles, but I don't think it was 100% because they're not, you know, at this point wanting to give away everything that they publish.
Yeah, it depends on the RSS feed.
Yeah.
Any RSS feed that has the full content could be any RSS feed.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so Calibre is definitely worth checking out. Another one that's I love is Instapaper. And the idea here is that you're surfing around the net, you come across a long article in the Atlantic or the New Yorker or something, and I'll often say, I know I want to read this article, but I don't want to read it here at my computer. So once you've got Instapaper loaded into your system, you'll see a little bug that says, actually you can see it up here on mine, it says read later. So if I'm at an article that I want to read on my Kindle, I click that, it gets sent over to Instapaper, and then you've got settings in Instapaper that decide where everything's going to go, but you can periodically, Instapaper will just send wirelessly the articles that I've captured that way to my Kindle. So I get a new feed that I created for myself from Instapaper, and they're very easy to read. They clear out a lot of the visual clutter that you see on the website, so generally you're just seeing the article, and each article that you've loaded ends up being like a chapter, so you can easily go forward and back to the content that way.
As somebody who uses Instapaper every day, it's something that is powerful no matter what device you have, because one of the things that I don't think works with the Kindle but works with the iPhone and the iPad is that it actually does what the Kindle does for books and syncs the place that you were in an article across multiple devices. Like, so if you start reading an article, the Kindle just does that anyway.
Yeah.
But if you have an iPhone and you read half of a New Yorker article, but you put it into paper, and then you pick up your iPad or you pick up your iPod, you're in the same spot.
Yeah. Because you're essentially going back to the Instapaper site.
Yeah.
It remembers where you were. Yeah.
It is by far, I mean, it's free to start.
Yeah.
The paid version is only a few dollars in total.
You know, another good use in a recent improvement of it, you can make folders. So sometimes when I've been preparing for an interview for my podcast, I'll go through and I'll find articles about this person, and I'll just dump them into a folder with his name. And then it'll show up on my Kindle as, it looks like a magazine, and so I've just got articles that I can page through about that person. And I've created sort of a personal research document that I can and I can do notes and highlights on it, whatever I want to do. So Instapaper is a good deal. I want to talk about, finish up talking about authors and what this whole world means for authors. This is of interest to me because when I retired from a corporate career, I got an MFA in poetry at Bennington, and so, you know, spent some time trying to get my poems published in little magazines, and I had a manuscript of poetry, and a lot of friends had novels in there. And the whole scene there, I found so abhorrent that I ended up just abandoning. So the deal is, you're a writer, you've got an MFA maybe, you've got some great material, you hope to find an agent, and that step is a huge dividing line. So the lucky few will find an agent. Then the agent goes around to the publishers trying to get a deal. And so there's another lucky few. So it's like this huge funnel where all the potential good stuff gets put in at the top, and then a few little lucky people end up getting their books sold. Well, this changes everything. And it's happening, I think, faster than anybody really thought it was going to happen. There's a guy named J.A. Conrath,
who has, he's sort of a provocateur on this business.
And he has been published by, he survived that funnel and has had some of his books that are history books. So he's had some experience in that world, but he has totally glommed on to the world of ebook publishing. And he's part of his arsenal is this blog, The Newbie's Guide to Publishing. The thing that's cool about Conrad is he tells everything. He tells you how many books he sold, how much he's making, how many he's selling on Kindle, how many he's selling on Sony Reader. You know, a lot of people are a little private about this stuff, but he's decided to just put it all out there. And in this most recent post that he put up, kind of summarizing where he is, he announces that he expects in 2010 to have made $100,000 selling his books this way. A couple of things are happening here. One is he's publishing through the digital text platform at Amazon. So he's getting 70% of the revenue as his royalty. This compares with usually 25% that would come for ebook royalties from the traditional publishers. And the other thing is he's in charge of the pricing. He is saying that the perfect ebook price for the kind of book that he's writing, good, solid, entertaining fare, is $2.99. He says that in some of his traditional books, where he doesn't control the pricing, they've got them up at, you know, $6.99, $7.99, and they're not selling. So he's got the ability on the books that he's taking control of to be aggressive on the price, generate big demand, get a bigger share of it himself, and he's getting a lot of buzz because word is spreading around, and he's good at the marketing. That's something that really helps if you're going to do this. And as a result, he's got $100,000. I love this quote here in his thing. He says, "I spent 12 years trying to break into publishing and 8 years doing everything I could to succeed. Now I'm finally able to write full-time, which is what I've wanted to do all along. No more tours, no more appearances, no more accessibility to the entire world. I'm not a motivational speaker, I'm not a teacher, I'm not a salesman, I'm not a dog or pony show, I'm not an outlier, I'm just a writer, damn it, and that's all I'm going to be. So do you want to be just a writer too?" He's got a bit of a mission in life to really spread the word here, but you know, he's got a good story to tell. Yeah.
I just want to offer a slightly contrasting point of view.
Sure.
As both a self-published book, and I just came out a week ago with my I made it through the funnel and got an actual published book. And I've wrestled with this a lot because I have a self-published book, which I currently have 1,000 copies of sitting in a warehouse in Minnesota where they've been for the last 3 years. And what I've discovered is the simply because there's a low hurdle to publishing something, where you define publishing as you somehow stick these words somewhere where other people can get them. On one hand, it means that if you want the ego blast of, oh, look, I wrote a book, you can kind of give that to yourself. But if you actually want to sell enough of them, it is really about the market, which has almost nothing to do at all with the task. In fact, I would claim it has nothing to do with the task of writing. And I've been able to find individuals who have theories about how they did it, but then when I try to do similar things or see other people try to do similar things, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because the part they miss is they were in the right place at the right point in the adoption curve, they were the only person in their genre, and by the way, they happen to be really good at writing sales copy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that, so, I mean, I guess I want to say, although on one hand, the ease of publishing is a tremendous boon, on the other hand, it also means lots and lots of people are doing it, so to get noticed above the 100,000 people who entered the market this week, you have to be good at some way of attracting enough attention to get that kind of traffic.
Yeah.
So it's a,
yeah. Can I make a podcast recommendation?
Yep.
The CD Baby DIY Musician podcast. Or any other resource specific to independent musicians, because what you're describing has been happening in my world for decades, you know, the indie music world. It's the exact same thing. There is no hurdle with the invention of GarageBand to releasing an indie album and getting it put on the iTunes Music Store, you know, the number one retailer in the world. So what? You know, you still have to be able to promote an album, and it's exactly the same way with a book.
I mean, for me, what I found is I don't actually like the marketing activities. So although
I don't
I know what they are,
yeah.
But when I sit down in my office to do stuff, you know, they somehow are always the to-do items that don't get crossed off at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I love marking.
There you go.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
either just connect.
I love
it's a game.
And
it's so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you work on a percentage, sure. that's the kicker. Indie project, indie budget. CDBabyPodcast.com. Really, I just mean look to independent musicians and how they've been marketing their stuff. And there's I'm noticing this direct analog mm-hmm. to the same thing with selling ebooks. Obviously, they're not identical, but oh my God, are they like, you know, almost twins here?
Yeah, I think the thing that's intriguing. I'm sure that's the case, and I would probably be more excited if I prefer my writing to marketing. But the fact is that there's probably about 5% of the book market now is represented by ebooks, with people talking about it going up to 50% maybe sometime in the next 10 to 15 years. So anything, if you're an author with aspirations to connect with an audience, It's a really good time to at least experiment with it, to at least understand, you know, who are the winners, who's not, what works, what doesn't. Because anything you do when the market is 5% is going to be bringing you, you know, much more when the market's 50%. I think that the issue of timing, and the other thing that I like, and it's more sort of philosophy, the old model, I've heard it described as a guy that I heard talk, Richard Nash, very harsh on the traditional publishing industry, saying it's basically a club of hobbyists that have decided who's going to be published. I mean, that's sort of the history of it going back into the 30s and all. And that's breaking down. And to me, that's a good thing. But it's chaos now, and it's hard work to get yourself noticed. But, you know, there's all kinds of tools. There's a guy that is a blogger, has a blog named Kindle Nation, Stephen Windwalker, also has a small press, Harvard Press. And he's developed a huge following. His blog is the number one subscribed blog on the Kindle, ahead of the New York Times and everything else, because he gives people a steady diet of free books, and he's a great writer. He's a really fun guy. Well, he'll take somebody who's kind of, you know, showed up somehow on his screen, has some decent material, maybe has approached him, and he'll highlight it and say, you know, this week I'm highlighting this author. And they'll go from like ranked 250,000 on the Amazon store up to 500 because he mentioned it. And there's, you know, my little podcast has had some effect. I was approached by a writer named Staten Rabin. But she was a published author, traditionally, I think Simon & Schuster, and she had the idea to put out a book on the life of Buddy Holly, timed to the 50th anniversary of his tragic death in a plane crash. So what the first thing that drew her to the Kindle is, I can get this done in 6 months and have it show up on the anniversary date. I certainly couldn't do that if I was on the year time frame for a printed book. She got a hold of me, and I interviewed on the podcast, and that generated some attention. I don't get the idea from the email I got from her last night that she's been totally blown away by the sales. I think it's probably been steady and reasonable. She learned a lot. One of the big messages she said to pass along is this issue of finding somebody to format the book, because she used Joshua Talent, and it turned out really well. And I think she was maybe a little less of a idealist about this brave new world of ebooks. One of the things she said is, if you get a decent ebook out there and it gets some audience, you might get the attention of an agent and a publisher. You might kind of get back into that other world, which is clearly still the main game. The creativity of, okay, I've got a book that's going to be on Kindle. How do I find the Kindle reader? She used Google AdWords pretty effectively. One problem with Google AdWords is you can't use the word Kindle in your Google ad. So you have to find other ways so that people are clicking through and they have an ebook reader. You don't want to waste your per-click money on people that don't. Yeah.
I did want to add just one more thing about the traditional publishing thing. What it does give you, interestingly, is access to a whole level of PR and things, which for, you know, right or wrong, I'm making no judgment, but mm-hmm. but there is an entire machinery set up to advertise things for traditional publishers.
Right.
So one of the things that is one of my hypotheses is that you can get the traditionally published book, which, you know, as I said, I'm currently going through that process. My hope is that getting access to that level of PR, advertising, and sort of that network will then enable me to do a self-published book next, because I will have gotten another high enough Q score that, you know, at that point, it'll be news. But
does anybody in here have a published book, traditionally published? Because I do, and if you're a first-time author, you have no, there's no access. And you have to make it just like you do with the self-published.
But
it's sexier. People will pay you more to speak because you have a printed copy.
No, but my point, however, is there are plenty of TV shows, for example, that will not bring you on unless you have a self-published book.
Then that point is well taken.
I mean, I got on the Fox News 3 days after my book got published. Whereas with my self-published book, I've been spending a couple of years trying to get TV.
That's
Fox
where
News
okay. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
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 I admit I'm iPad centric, but I hope we can have a little discussion about the visual nature of the book,
right,
and where you think it's going to evolve to, because it's not going to stay just words.
Right.
If there's an iPad that you can add video and audio and music and who knows what else.
That's a fascinating question. You know, the iPad capabilities are, you know, basically endless in terms of. There's a book out that's a biography of Roosevelt that Amazon published. On the Kindle, you can't see the videos and the things that they added to it. But on the iPad, you certainly can. A lot of where these devices are aimed at, there are 30 million people in the country who read more than two books a month. And they account for a big percentage of total books. And this device, these devices, at this point have a pretty small piece of that group. They're likely to end up with almost all of it. Because the, you know, not everybody is at this point, but I'll just speak on my own. I've always been a lover, a reader, a poet, and all this stuff, totally steeped in literature. And for me, these devices, the Kindle, it gives me the words. And it gives them me the words in a font that I like. The screen is easy on the eyes. One thing that I've noticed is that I seem to read more attentively and more pleasurably, almost in kind of a Zen-focused way, because I'm always reading a much smaller field of words than I do in a book. You know, in a book I've got at least two pages facing me, and then the other part of it that a lot of people find difficult, they say, I don't know where I am in this book. I can't thumb through. I mean, in a book, I can feel how far I am. So at some point, I found that I submitted to that. I said, you know, I'm reading this screen, this paragraph, this sentence. I really don't have any idea where I am in the book. I'm here on this page. And that, I think, helps my mind to take the words in a more intimate way. Now, I fight this battle in my life. I'm on the computer probably, you know, 6-7 hours a day, and I've had a lot. And it's the thing when I pick up my Kindle, it's great. And there's a new thing now called Kindle Twit that you can put on your Kindle, and it gives you this really easy way to check your Twitter screen. And you know, I mentioned in the podcast, I basically said, I hope you won't do this, because I think this is wrong. Because when I move to my chair and I set the iPad down, I'm just there with the words, and it's a respite. So I don't know how this all works out, but that's what fascinates me, because you've got in motion technology that makes the whole business of writing and literature and creating with these forms up for grabs. And you know, in 5 years there may be some way of presenting a story that has text and you click here and something happens that hasn't even been thought of yet.
Is anybody here doing that or thinking of that?
Yeah, I think also with if you're doing literature, but if you're also doing things with an instruction manual, how to do things, which is still
in form, right.
Those kind of things are really important. And
Yeah. Okay, that's all the time we've got. I'd be glad to, you know, step out in the hall with anybody, and hope this has been useful to you. Thanks.
Time now for some talk about content on the Kindle. And whenever I'm scratching my head for something to talk to you in the content area, I pretty frequently head for one of the longest running and best written blogs in the Kindle sphere, Jan Zlendich's kindlereader.blogspot.com. I love how she comes up with a fresh angle for her Kindle readers and then delivers specific book suggestions to go with it. Her post of October 14th is a good example. It's titled NaNoWriMo for the Kindle Reader, Mastering the Craft of Fiction. And it begins by noting that National Novel Writing Month, that's what that abbreviation is, NaNoWriMo, and that National Novel Writing Month is coming around again in November. Last year, more than 167,000 writers took up the challenge to write a 50,000-word novel beginning on November 1st and ending by November 31st. And Jan reports that as of October 14th, 50,000 had already signed up for the 2010 event. Her post suggests books available on Kindle for aspiring writers, and it turns out that I know the co-author of one of them. She's Anne Rittenberg, an ace literary agent in Manhattan who, well, about 10 years ago or more, agreed to take me on as a client based on a quirky manuscript that I was working on at the time. It was titled Downsizing the Heart, and it was a book-length epic tale of my adventures as a corporate executive, and it was written entirely in blank verse. As it turned out, Anne decided that my final version of the book failed to ignite her interest enough for her to take the next step of presenting it to publishers. But in the process of working with her, I came to admire her fierce commitment to her authors that she represented and her common sense approach to the publishing business. Her book is co-authored with an author, Laura Whitcomb, and it's titled Your First Novel. It's available on Kindle for $9.99, published by Writer's Digest Books. It has 5 stars based on 25 Amazon reviews, and I'm sure it's a winner for anyone thinking about joining NaNoWriMo this year or just interested in the craft of fiction. Other books that Jan highlights in this post that have to do with writing are No Plot, No Problem, A Low-Stress, High-Velocity Guide to Writing a Novel in 30 Days by Chris Beatty. That's certainly to the point. And Write Great Fiction, Plot and Structure by James Scott Bell, 3 a.m. Epiphany, Writing Fiction for Dummies, and Writing Tools, 50 Essential Strategies for Every Writer. Although I have not included comments on these preloaded episodes of the podcast, I do welcome your thoughts on anything that I've talked about or other topics related to the Kindle and ebooks. You can email me at podchronicles@gmail.com or leave a comment at the show notes page, which is thekindlechronicles.com. There is also a good conversation always going on at my Facebook page. You will find that by going to Facebook and then searching for The Reading Edge. If you haven't checked out my other podcast at thereadingedge.com, I hope you'll do so. You'll find that at thereadingedge.com. While I'm in Africa, I plan to do a lot of photography and writing, sort of get back to my writing days at my blog, which is lenedgerly.com, lenedgerly.com. So if you'd like to travel along with our adventures in Africa, you might find some things there that you'd enjoy reading. One of the highlights is I've just today finished booking a trip on the famous Blue Train, which is a luxury train that will take me from Cape Town to Pretoria on November 1st and November 2nd. Next week's podcast, TKC 122, will, as it happens, fall on the exact 3-year anniversary of the launch of the original Kindle, and I'm hoping that I will have a guest from Amazon on that show to talk about how far this revolutionary reading device has come in so little time. As I'm finishing up preparing for the trip, I've been in contact with Amazon, and it looks like there's a pretty good chance of getting one of the executive team to come on the show for an interview. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monegat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA Promonet. This is Len Edgerly for the Kindle Chronicles, pre-recording this episode in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.